The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's stories include: jobless Americans have few options as benefits expire, and global markets rise on news of weak U.S. hiring data. Millions of jobless Americans lost their unemployment benefits on Monday, leaving only a handful of economic support programs for those who are still being hit financially by the year-and-a-half-old coronavirus pandemic. Two critical programs expired on Monday. One provided jobless aid to self-employed and gig workers, and another provided benefits to those who have been unemployed for more than 6 months. The Biden administration's $300 weekly supplemental unemployment benefit also ran out on Monday. It's estimated that roughly 8.9 million Americans will lose all or some of these benefits. While the White House has encouraged states to keep paying the $300 weekly benefit by using money from the stimulus bills, no states have opted to do so. Many states even opted out of the federal program early after some businesses complained they couldn't find enough people to hire. The data have shown minimal economic benefits from cutting off aid early in those states. Economists Peter McCrory and Daniel Silver of J.P. Morgan found zero correlation between job growth and state decisions to drop the federal unemployment aid, at least so far. An economist at Columbia University, Kyle Coombs, found only minimal benefits. The amount of money injected by the federal government into jobless benefits since the pandemic began is nothing short of astronomical. The roughly $650 billion, according to the nonpartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, kept millions of Americans who lost their jobs staying in their apartments, paying for food and gasoline, and keeping up with their bills. The banking industry has largely attributed the few defaults on loans this past 18 months to the government relief efforts. The end of the pandemic unemployment benefits will be an abrupt jolt to millions of Americans who won't find a job in time for this arbitrary end to assistance, Andrew Stettner with the Century Foundation said in a report. The ending of these programs comes as the U.S. economy has recovered from the pandemic, but with substantial gaps in the recovery. The Labor Department says there are still 5.7 million fewer jobs than before the pandemic. These benefits are also ending sooner than during the recession. In that downturn, jobless benefits in various forms were extended from the start of the recession in 2008-2009 all the way until 2013. When those benefits finally ended, just 1.3 million people were still receiving aid. Americans still financially struggling in the pandemic will find a smaller patchwork of social support programs, both at the state level and through the federal government. The White House approved last month a 25% increase in food stamp assistance, also known as SNAP benefits. That increase will continue indefinitely for those 42.7 million Americans who receive those payments. While the federal eviction moratorium has expired, roughly a dozen states have extended their moratoriums, including California, New York, Washington, Illinois, and Minnesota. New York's eviction moratorium was extended until January 15. The Biden administration also pushed the restart of federal student loan repayments until January. Those were supposed to have restarted this month. Those unemployed less than 6 months will still be able to collect their benefits, but the amount will fall back to the level that each state pays. The average weekly check is roughly $387, according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, but varies greatly state by state. But none of these programs will have the flexibility or direct impact as unemployment benefits being paid directly to jobless Americans, wrote J.P. Morgan economist McCrory and Silver. They say the loss of benefits could lead to job losses that potentially could offset any of the job gains made as the economy recovers. Next, global markets rise on news of weak U.S. hiring data. Global stock markets and Wall Street futures rose Monday after weak U.S. hiring in August fueled expectations the Federal Reserve might postpone withdrawal of economic stimulus that has boosted stock prices. London and Frankfurt opened higher. Shanghai, Tokyo, and Hong Kong rose. Investors appeared to welcome Friday's Labor Department report that U.S. employers added only 235,000 jobs in August, barely one-third of the consensus forecast of 730,000. Investors hope that might prompt the Fed to postpone a reduction in bond purchases that pump money into the financial system. Officials have indicated the Fed board might decide about that this month, but wants to be sure a recovery is established and say employment is a key factor. The weaker-than-expected jobs gains drastically reduced the chance of Fed tapering at the September board meeting, Yip Jung Rong of IG said in a report. On Wall Street, futures for the S&P and the Dow Jones Industrial Average were up 0.2%. The S&P 500 index fell 0.1% on Friday, but still was near a record high. Also Friday, the Dow fell 0.2%, while the NASDAQ Composite rose 0.2% to a record. In early trading, the FTSE 100 in London rose 0.5% to 7,172.03, and Frankfurt's DAX advanced 0.6% to 15,869.96. The CAC 40 in Paris added 0.5% to 6,725.01. In Asia, the Shanghai Composite Index rose 1.1% to 3,621.86, and the Nikkei 225 in Tokyo gained 1.8% to 29,659.89. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong added 1% to 26,163.63. The Kospi in South Korea advanced less than 0.1% to 3,203.33, and Sydney's S&P ASX 200 ended up less than 0.1% at 7,528.50. India's Sensex rose 0.3% to 58,312.88. New Zealand, Singapore, and Jakarta gained while Bangkok retreated. The weak U.S. hiring also prompted concern the spread of the coronavirus's more contagious Delta variant is hurting economic growth. It was well below the monthly average of more than 900,000 jobs added in June and July. The dollar advanced to 109.89 yen from Friday's 109.64 yen. The euro declined to 1.1869 from 1.1891. In energy markets, benchmark U.S. crude fell 47 cents to $68.82 per barrel in electronic trading on the New York Mercantile Exchange. The contract sank 70 cents on Friday to $69.29. Brent crude, the basis for international oil prices, lost 49 cents to $72.12 per barrel in London. It declined 42 cents the previous session to $72.61. Next, how to apply for rental assistance in North Carolina. The U.S. Supreme Court has ended the federal moratorium on evictions and state-level protections ended in June, leaving many tenants in North Carolina who fell behind on rent due to COVID-19 pandemic vulnerable to eviction. An estimated 400,000 households in North Carolina have no confidence that they can pay the next month's rent, according to a Household Pulse survey from the U.S. Census Bureau ending August 16. The survey was based on a small sample size, so the actual number may be much different. Are you one of those renters? Here is what you need to know. Where can I get assistance? Well, it depends on where you live. North Carolina's statewide emergency rental assistance, the Housing Opportunities and Prevention of Eviction Program, or HOPE, received $396 million for rental aid from the federal stimulus in December. As of September 1, HOPE had obligated $290 million to tenants and landlords. Once the program runs through that, it will get a portion of the $21.55 billion in assistance approved by Congress in March, leaving a large amount of funds available. To apply for assistance, go to hope.nc.gov or call 888-927-5467. But the HOPE program is only for renters in 88 of 100 counties. The 12 other counties which met a population threshold and 5 tribal governments receive their own federal allocation and run their own programs. Wake, Durham, and Johnson counties have their own programs. Wake County Rental Assistance. If you're in Wake County, you can apply for help at housewake.org by calling 919-899-9911 or by emailing housing@telemon.org. As of the last week in July, Wake had spent $4.3 million of the $63 million it was allocated from December. Durham County Rental Assistance. Tenants in Durham County can apply online at durhamerap.dconc.gov. or by punching option 7 after calling 919-560-8000. You can also email durhamerap@dconc.gov. Of the nearly $26 million the county got from the December aid, Durham had spent about $2.8 million as of the last week in July. Johnson County rental assistance. Johnson County hasn't spent any of its $13 million in federal rental assistance, as the program isn't launching its online application portal until Tuesday, September 7th, according to an announcement from the county. The county said tenants can visit the Department of Social Services at 714 North Street in Smithfield for help, or email for assistance at dsassistance@johnstonnc.com. The department's phone number is 919-989-5300. All the programs cover for late utility bills as well. Wake, Durham, and Johnston counties will also have their own allocations from the $21.55 billion package from March. Am I eligible? U.S. Treasury Department guidelines for the assistance have a list of rules on who is eligible for the rental assistance. For the HOPE program, you have to rent where you currently live, and you must have missed a rent payment since April 1, 2020. If you don't have to currently be late on rent, as HOPE considers someone who has been late at some point since April 2020 at risk for eviction. You also must have lost income, been unemployed, or had a significant financial hardship due to the pandemic to qualify. There's also some income eligibility. You must make 80% or below the area median income. Go to bit.ly/3BWUJL6 to find the median income for your area. Wake, Durham, and Johnston counties largely have the same eligibility requirements. The exception is that Wake is giving preference to those at 50% or below AMI. Can landlords apply? In Wake County, landlords can initiate the application process by filling out a form through the county. Wake will then reach out to your tenant to guide them through the process. The HOPE program has a similar system where landlords can refer their tenants to the state by calling. HOPE will then reach out to tenants to assist with their application. That could change, though, as a bill in the state legislature would allow landlords to apply on behalf of tenants through HOPE. The head of the program, Laura Hogshead, said that this would inadvertently cause administrative delays in the process, the News and Observer reported. For those in other counties, landlords can encourage tenants to apply. Where to get legal help with eviction? If an eviction has been filed against you, you can reach out to Legal Aid of North Carolina at 866-219-5262. If your landlord doesn't accept assistance through Wake's program, the county is providing free legal services for tenants facing eviction. If you are part of an agency that wants to refer a resident facing eviction in Durham, you can email the Durham Eviction Diversion Program at alexisc@legalaidnc.org. Why did the eviction moratorium end? The U.S. Supreme Court, in an unsigned opinion, struck down the federal moratorium issued by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It wasn't scheduled to expire until October 3rd. In the 6-3 decision, the court ruled that the CDC exceeded its authority. The CDC order, a modified form of the nationwide moratorium that lasted from last September until the end of July, barred evictions for non-payment against people who have attested that they lost income due to the pandemic and are unable to pay rent. The moratorium was also limited to counties with high or substantial spread of COVID-19. At the time the order was struck down, that included all of North Carolina, according to the CDC. The order was first issued to prevent COVID-19 spread among displaced people. A study found that in North Carolina in summer 2020, when the state had no moratorium in effect, over 15,000 cases and 300 deaths were due to evictions, the News and Observer reported in December. North Carolina did have its own moratorium that lasted from last October until the end of June, but Republican members of the NC Council of State voted to end it days before it expired, the News and Observer reported. Next, lawmakers, Ida damage shows need for infrastructure upgrades. Shaken by haunting images of surging rivers, flooded roads and subways, and other damage caused by the remnants of Hurricane Ida, lawmakers from both parties are vowing to upgrade the nation's aging infrastructure network. As the deadly storm moved from the Gulf Coast through the Northeast, members of Congress said the deluge offered irrefutable evidence that power lines, roads, bridges, and other infrastructure are deteriorating even as storms and other extreme weather are strengthening. At least 50 people from Virginia to Connecticut died as storm water from Ida's remnants cascaded into people's homes and engulfed automobiles, overwhelming urban drainage systems unable to handle so much rain in such a short time. At least 16 deaths were blamed on the storm in Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. Global warming is upon us, said Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat, New York. When you get two record rainfalls in a week in New York City, it's not just coincidence. When you get all the changes that we have seen in weather, that's not a coincidence. It's going to get worse and worse and worse unless we do something about it. Schumer and other lawmakers said the catastrophe is the latest example of why the nation needs the nearly trillion-dollar infrastructure bill passed by the Senate last month. He and other Democrats also are calling for passage of President Joe Biden's $3.5 trillion partisan rebuilding plan aimed at helping families and combating climate change. It's so imperative to pass the two bills, Schumer said. Democrats hope to pass both bills by the end of the month, but action on the bipartisan bill may be difficult until the larger package is ready. Progressives have said they won't support a bipartisan bill without strong companion legislation to advance their priorities. Biden made a pitch Friday for the partisan bill, saying it is going to change things on our streets across the country. He cited the bill's historic investment in roads, rail, and bridges, as well as clean energy, clean water, and universal broadband. It's about resilience, Biden said. Make our roads and highways safer. Make us more resilient to the kinds of devastating impacts from extreme weather we're seeing in so many parts of the country. The plan includes $110 billion to build and repair roads and bridges and $66 billion to upgrade railroads. It also includes about $60 billion to upgrade the electric grid and build thousands of miles of transmission lines to expand use of renewable energy and nearly $47 billion to adapt and rebuild roads, ports, and bridges to help withstand damage from stronger storms as well as wildfires and drought. If we're going to make our country more resilient to natural disasters, whatever they are, we have to start preparing now, said Senator Bill Cassidy, Republican from Louisiana. Cassidy, a lead negotiator on the bipartisan bill, has touted the infrastructure legislation as a boon to the hurricane-prone states such as his. I'm sure hoping that Republicans look around my state, see this damage, and say if there's money for resiliency, money to harden the grid, money to help sewer and water, then maybe this is something we should be for, he told CNN. Ultimately, repair and replacement of roads, bridges, and other infrastructure damaged by Hurricane Ida and other natural disasters are likely to be funded by Congress as emergency relief money. But the bipartisan bill will be valuable in providing major investments in future-proofing infrastructure against climate change and extreme weather, such as Ida, according to Jeff Davis, a senior fellow at the Eno Center for Transportation, a Washington think tank. Next, Ethiopian Airlines and Boeing settle over 737 MAX crash. 2.5 years after the deadly Ethiopian Airlines 737 MAX crashed, with the final investigation report into the accident still pending, the airline's management has reached a settlement with Boeing and said it expects to resume flying the jet again by January. On Thursday, Ethiopian Airlines CEO Tewold Gebremariam said that he was convinced beyond reasonable doubt that the MAX, as upgraded by Boeing after the two fatal crashes, is now safe. I can confirm that we are committed to the Boeing 737 MAX, he said. My estimate is by the end of the calendar year or beginning of next year, January, we will be flying the airplane. The Ethiopian government's aviation authority has not yet lifted the grounding of the MAX imposed a day after flight ET-302 crashed in March 2019 and took 157 lives. Yet clearly the government-owned airline fully expects the regulators to approve the jet's return to service by the end of the year. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.